Before we get started with this week's special edition of the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast, let me talk to you about this fantasy site Draft. Draft.com, Draft in your app store, is a great way to play fantasy sports. They do the snake-style drafts just the way you like them. They've introduced auction drafts. They have best ball drafts. They've introduced NFL postseason best ball drafts. They'll have baseball, basketball, all that. But for all your snake drafts, they have PGA, which we love on the Always Pressing pod. Got NHL, NBA, MLB, NFL. So much fun. And if you're new to the app and playing on draft.com, use promo code SDSports, SD as in dog, sports, at checkout. You'll get entry to a free $3 tournament of your choice. So go check out draft.com, draft in your app store, promo code SDSports. Tonight's special edition of the pod, and Jesse has a friend, Lee Chaney, who is a PGA Tour caddy for Josh Teeter. You've heard us talk about Josh Teeter on the web.com recap show, on the season preview show, on other podcasts early on in the fall swing. Josh re-into the tour. Morehead State alums with Jesse and Lee Chaney. So lots of fun stuff getting to talk to a PGA professional caddy and much, much more. So go check it out. Give us a rating and review on iTunes. We'd much, much appreciate it. But to this week's special edition of the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast with PGA Tour caddy Lee Chaney.
Play. Sir. Yeah. Yeah.
Kane is in the building. Yeah.
Alright, already the show goes on all night. Till the morning we dream so long. Anybody ever wonder when they will see the thunder? Just remember when it comes up. The show goes on.
And welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast. This week we have a special edition, and in order to break it down, I have my co-host as always. You can find him on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods. Jesse, how we doing, man?
Doing well, man. Super excited to be here. Reason being is I get to bring on a very good friend of mine. We met when we were probably, I don't know, would you 6 or 7 years old, maybe even younger than that. We played high school golf together. He's a lot better than I am. So he actually went on to play college golf. I didn't get offered any scholarships to play college golf because I'm not nearly at this guy's level. But my buddy Lee Chaney will be on the podcast with us tonight. He is also on the bag currently for Josh Teeter, who is a PGA Tour member, fresh off the web.com, just graduated, got his PGA Tour card, so he'll be playing a full season on the PGA Tour. So, Lee, how you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Awesome.
Thanks for being here, dude. We appreciate it a lot. I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about yourself and kind of what the things that you've been through. I know, obviously, we played high school golf together. I'm going to go ahead and just say that again.
Yep.
It's a, you know, it's from Carrington Green.
Yeah,
Carrington Greens, Sheltowee Trail Country Club, Walking the Hills, out at different golf courses. But yeah, just tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll go from there.
All right. Well, grew up playing golf. My mom and dad both played. My mom came to school here, and there was a club team, so she was actually on the club team at the time. My dad, college golf coach for 38 years. You know, so I as soon as I was able to walk, I was playing. And Jesse and I actually first started playing at the, or at least I did, at the Morehead State University golf course. And that's where I got my head pummeled by Jesse. So I tried to practice and get better and hopefully catch him. So so that worked out. And
let's just say you soared past me.
I was beating you
when I was 6 and you were 3, and then after that it was over with.
Jesse took a little pause for a while with practicing and stuff, and I worked a little bit harder there for a few years, but tell you what, we had some great memories, and it's been pretty awesome growing up and being around Jesse and being around some of the people I've had the luck of being around, learning from. I played college golf at Morehead State, where my dad was the golf coach, and went on, played 8 more years professionally, and I didn't make it through Q school. And one winter, Josh actually called me, and I was playing really well on some mini tours in Orlando. I'd won like four tournaments, and I was playing great. And he just asked me if I'd caddy for him. He just lost his tour card and was going to have an unconditional season on the web. So I didn't have any money to keep playing, and I thought, you know, this would be a cool opportunity. I mean, I'd be traveling to Brazil, Colombia, some pretty cool places out of the country, which I'd never been, and it was a way for me to kind of stay in golf, but yet also have kind of a breather from playing, because I still wanted to play. So I did that, and it's led me to where I am now. I've been very fortunate kind of to stay in it, even though I'm not playing.
Yeah. Well, to say I'm proud of you is an understatement, Lee. I mean, I'm very proud of you and to call you my friend, but tell us a little bit about what you think, like, the biggest difference between college golf and pro golf is.
Well, college golf, you know, you obviously have a coach that's managing your time for you, you know, around practice and classes. And then when you turn pro, if you're good enough and you have the money and the backing to do it, it's all about yourself and how you manage it for yourself. And I think people that have more money may have teams that kind of help manage it for them. But for the most part, people turning pro are really learning how to manage, because they're not going to class, and they're really learning how to work and practice on their own and not have somebody standing over them all the time. And I think that's the main thing starting out as a professional.
All right. We've heard some people talk about it before, and you've lived it firsthand. So I'm just curious your thoughts on it. How big is there of a gap between, like, you know, each level on tour? You know, you said you're over there in Florida for a while. You know, there's the Canadian tour, the Mexico tour, then you got the web tour, and then you go to the PGA tour. What kind of a stepping blocks? Like, what's the talent gaps in between the stages?
Well, what I'll say with the web and PGA, if you, let's just say you took out the top 50 in the world, okay? We move them in their own category. If you take, let's say, the next 100 guys on the PGA Tour, and you took the top 50 guys on the web, they're all in the same category. The talent level is the top 50 in the world, top 50 on the PGA Tour are on a different consistency level, the confidence level, some physical level. but the, for the most part, they're all pretty darn close.
Yeah. I've heard someone say it's literally just like, you know, a couple shots here or there, and it just elevates you different levels, and just, if you have it that round, you have it. If you don't, you don't. It's pretty crazy to think that's what separates. You know, we had a web.com guy, a writer on a while ago, and he was telling us, like, he goes to the qualifying schools and everything, and just the pressure he sees going on there, and just the difference in the players. It's crazy that it's that minute of a difference.
I will say this. I listened to Bob Rotella talk to some players about this. If you had, like, say, everybody on the PGA Tour, and or even everybody on the web.com tour, let's say the PGA Tour, you gave them all at the beginning of the year $2 million. And it would be in, let's just say, the tournaments, they only paid the top three individuals every tournament. So his argument is, and I kind of see it now thinking about it, if you give all these players that had their tour cards $2 million, and they're playing for basically the top three spots, you'd actually have better golf for more players, because they know that they have to shoot crazy scores, and they know they have to play well, and they don't have the burden of the financial stuff around them, paying for a caddy, paying for their families to travel, all that kind of stuff. So it's interesting. I think your better players – don't really worry about the money as some others would.
Yeah, it's, I could see. Yeah, it's obviously, if you're out there grinding for a living, obviously it, missing a cut is going to be a much bigger deal to someone like Teeter than it is somebody, Dustin Johnson, who's doesn't have to worry about money ever again for the rest of his life.
Right.
But somebody like Teeter is out there grinding, trying to make a living, has a family, wants to provide for him. So kind of piggybacking off of that, what are some of like the biggest differences from, you can talk about from a caddy perspective or a player perspective of playing on the web.com versus playing on the PGA Tour?
The courses on the web.com, I would say most of them are not anything like a PGA Tour setup golf course. PGA Tour courses are very longer. You're going to use almost all of your clubs in your bag. On the web, there's a lot of courses where you hit driver wedges, or you're not even hitting drivers off the tee like you are on the PGA Tour. Really forces you to hit driver most of the time, unless you're like a Cameron Champ or Dustin Johnson. But on the web, it's a little bit more target oriented. And then the courses we play at certain times of the year, you have a lot of wedges into softer greens, and it became birdie fest. And if you didn't shoot at least 20 under, you weren't going to finish in the top 10. So, which a PGA Tour event, a lot of times is somewhere between 12 under and 20 under that win a tournament. So it's just courses are a lot longer, and typically are, you know, they close them down a month in advance or 3 weeks in advance to get them ready. Which I don't think web courses do that. They close the day before. So it's a lot different.
What about from a caddy perspective? Like, do you get any different treatment on the PGA Tour versus being on the web.com tour? I've heard a lot of stories about caddies not getting treated very well either way, but is there any difference there as far as like any amenities or anything like
that
goes?
I'll be honest with you, the PGA Tour is a lot better because they provide food. The food is a lot better. Sometimes on the web, it would get a little bit, you know, for breakfast. I'll give you an example. For breakfast, you get donuts. On the PGA Tour, a lot of times you'd have eggs and bacon and sausage and fruit. And they do a lot better job taking care of the caddies, for sure. The web, I mean, don't get me wrong, there were some tournaments that really took care of the caddies, but for overall, it was a little bit weaker. So,
gotcha. One more thing, Bubba. Let me ask one more question, because you were just talking about the courses there. What do you think about the web moving their finals to Victoria National for the next 10 years? It's obviously it's a close golf course to us. I couldn't break 90 there. Get out of here. So what are your thoughts on that?
I like the change. During the time of year that we were playing there, I believe it was always in April, I think, late March or April.
Yeah, it was around then. Yeah.
So the weather, as you know, the weather that time of year in this region is very sketchy.
I mean,
you could be in the 50s blowing 20 miles an hour, or colder. Now that it's moving into September, I think the course is always in great shape, but I think it'll be a lot more fun to play from a player's perspective, and you'll see a lot better golf. A lot of time, you know, I caddied there twice, and it was more of survive and advance type of golf than pleasure to go around and shoot some low scores.
Yeah, it's a tough golf course. Go ahead, Bubba.
Yeah,
that's kind of the consensus we've heard from, or we've read or whatever from a lot of people, is that they're going to miss going up to the scoring friendly environment of the final rounds to go in there. But one last question on this web life versus PGA life, and I just have to ask you, because a couple years back, we were talking before the show, I go to Pebble at least once or twice during the tournament to go hang out. And we decided to go to Buffalo Wild Wings in the Seaside after the tournament, about 20 minutes away. And there were two caddies playing Golden Tee. Do you join the caddy parade on the Golden Tee? And if so, are you like one of like the experts at it, or do you have a different vice to get when you get away?
I'm definitely not one of, you know, I don't play it a lot. Peter Malinotti's caddy. I'm going brain dead with his name right now. I'll think of it in a minute. But he is supposedly the Golden Tee legend. Nobody can beat him. In fact, some places, some tour events actually put Golden Tee in the caddy area, caddy dining area. So you'll watch him, and he'll just kill everybody. So he's the one with all the money and the respect. So
surely they're not gambling, though, are they?
I think a little bit of gambling.
Not on the PGA Tour.
You get some tour events that have ping pong tables, and you'll have players in there playing against caddies, and caddies are trying to get in their player's pocketbook, you know, trying to get some of their cash, and it's great. I wish I was better at ping pong. Josh is really good, so I can't play him. But I really need to practice and try to find something to get some extra money out of some of those guys.
Hey, by the way, Chase just got a ping pong table.
Did he really?
Yeah, legit.
Yeah, I definitely ping pong need to go there and practice.
Come over, man.
Yeah, no, I
had to ask because these guys literally said they searched online for the nearest one from the golf course. So it was like, I knew it was like kind of a insider. Like they love playing this thing, so I was just curious. So like the week of an event, like we love golf. So we kind of watch all the aspects of golf, not just the Thursday through Sunday. You guys as caddies are kind of like the unsung heroes to some of these guys. Like, cause you guys go and put in a bunch of extra work that most of the regular fans have no clue what you do. So when you're leading up to like a tournament, what are you doing to help your golfer be best prepared for the week?
All right. So I always try to travel on Sunday if I can and get to if we have an off week, get to the tour site on Sunday night or try to get there by at least Monday morning. And I'll go out, walk the course. A lot of times there are sprinkler heads that are not marked with yardages. So I go and check and see which ones those are and try to match up the yardages with that sprinkler head. And there may be a mark or a number or something you need to write down. I'll go check, you know, elevation with how much is up and down in the yardage book. I'm basically checking if the yardage book is right or not. And then I'll write my own personal notes with depending on what the wind direction is on this hole. If it's, you know, if it's into the wind, you have a 280 carry bunker, maybe we should hit a hybrid off the tee and lay it back. Or if it's downwind, we're hitting driver and sending it over it, having a little wedge in, just stuff like that. And Josh usually likes to get out Monday evening or and practice some, maybe play nine holes. And then Tuesday, we'll go out and play 9 or 18. A lot of times it depends on the schedule of the tournament that week, because sometimes they'll have pro-ams going on Monday and Wednesday, and so you're always kind of working around that. He likes to play 9 holes on Monday, 9 holes on Tuesday, maybe try to get out early Wednesday for the pro-am, play 9 more holes, just depending on how he's feeling. And then from there, we'll usually at least once kind of go over the course and talk about how we're going to play it. And a lot of times these tournaments on the PGA Tour, Josh has played all these courses before. So I'm the one really learning more now than he is. So I'm listening to him and I'll give him my 2 cents here and there. But usually we're pretty much on the same page with how we want to play.
I got 2 questions for you from that.
Yep.
First off, what do you do with all these yardage? Like, do you get a new yardage book every time? Well, I know, like, if this is your first go-around, like you just said. But, yeah, you know, in other tours you've caddied on, do you get a new one every time, or do you just kind of bring the old one out and recheck things? Because these can be, like, a cool little stash.
Yeah. Typically, the tournament always gives you a new one. And the PGA Tour has this guy that goes out and designs these yardage books, and he does it every year, and sometimes it may change a little bit depending on if they've redone the course and, you know, bunkers or whatever. So just I always get the new one, and then just because I usually write a lot of notes, I need to get a new yardage book anyway because it looks bad by the time the week's over with. But I'll take the old one and use it as reference for what we've hit in the past and stuff on certain holes.
The other thing I had was you said he plays 9 on Monday, 9 on Tuesday. So is he not as worried about, you know, seeing the course a few times, or is he just more staying fresh when he's out there?
Staying fresh. If he hasn't seen the course before, we may play 18 holes on Tuesday, play 9 on Monday, 18 on Tuesday, and maybe 9 more on Wednesday morning. But if he's seen the course before and feels pretty comfortable, he may just do 9 holes and, you know, he's got a family, so he's trying to split time, you know, hanging out with his kids and wife. So he's trying to be a dad too.
Last question to kind of go with all this, you know, the week of a tournament deal. Now, when you're in the ropes, Thursday's happening, Thursday, Friday, hopefully making it to the weekend. Now, what's your role besides, you know, you're not just carrying a bag, you're not just telling them numbers. There's obviously other things. Some guys need you to be kind of a head coach. Some guys need you to do other things. What's your main role, or what do you see a lot of caddies' main role that's kind of not one that's just easy, like handing them a club?
It's different. I mean, it depends on what player you're with. Like, for example, I was with KJ Choi for 7 events last year, and he was the type, you know, his English is broken and he's kind of hard to understand. And so, like, you're really learning on what he wants by how he's saying things. And he actually kind of wanted me to say, all right, little draw 5 iron, little cut 4 iron, you know, stuff like that. And I was just like, okay, well, we got to make sure we cover some water here. So, I may go more with the 4 iron. you know, we can't be short on this hole or whatever. But and then some play like Josh and I have been around each other and played so much golf together that we know each other's game so well. We're very similar that, you know, when he says something, I pretty much agree with him. And unless I just see something that doesn't seem right or sound right, we'll talk about it a little bit more. But sometimes you can talk too much and it puts too much thought in the player's head. And then that gets them more flustered than anything. So you really want to try to be as clear as you can and just let them play, you know, let them do what they're built to do.
Yeah, we talk about that all the time, how obviously mental the game is and how it just completely mind fucks you all the time. And you know that as a player.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that's obviously a good thing to sometimes just back up and stay the way. I heard KJ at one point told you, if I miss it long, it's my fault. If I miss it left or right, it's your fault.
No, no, tell no. You that? He said, he goes, right or left, my mistake. Short or long? Your mistake.
See, I figured it was the other way around because obviously he's the one who controls how hard he hits it, and you're talking about the line.
But he's telling him distance for clubs.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, I got you. I was just thinking putts. I was thinking putts. That makes more sense if we're in the fairway.
Yeah.
All right, I got you.
Real quick, you just mentioned putts, Jesse. With this new rules coming up where you can kind of stand differently on putts, how do you think that's going to like change the caddy's role in the putting game with their – Claire.
Well, I really don't feel like it's going to change anything on the web or PGA Tour. The LPGA, it will change because it's going to make them play faster and they can't have their caddy lining them up and stuff like that. Now, I've only heard from other caddies that have caddied out there what it's like. I've personally never been there, but I think that'll help more the LPGA than the PGA web.
Gotcha. You just were mentioning how obviously Josh Teeter has been to a lot of these golf courses that you guys are going to play this year. In your eyes, does he play better at certain golf courses than others? Or do you think that doesn't matter? And it's just how he's been playing most recently.
Say the words.
Does course history exist? in your
yes,
mind.
Yes, course history definitely exists.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
You know, what I've noticed with Josh, and it's like almost all golfers to a degree, is, you know, they kind of have like, you know, like peaks and valleys and stuff like that during the course of a season. And whenever I notice he's starting to play better, more consistently, it doesn't matter what golf course he's on. He's gonna play well there.
Sure.
Now we look at a guy like Tiger Woods. You know, he has the luxury of setting his schedule and picking what courses he wants to go to. Like, you never saw him playing in Harbortown. You know, you never saw him playing at the Sony at Wildlife Country Club. And, you know, he's going to always play places like Torrey, where he's won 5-6 times, however many it is, because they're long golf courses. You know, it's fairly open, even though the rough can be penal. So a guy like that, who knows himself, knows that he'll do better on those courses, they'll definitely, you know, make their schedule out for that more. Josh,
gotcha.
You know, he's in the area where I just want to play whenever I get in. It doesn't matter what course,
yeah.
You know. So,
well, he's trying to make a living.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm with you. Go ahead, Bubba.
Okay, we kind of talked about this before we started recording, so say whatever you wish here. But we'll start with this one. What's one of your favorite memories from you personally playing on your tours, or it could be caddying if you want, because we'll get into some other, you know, funny stories here in a bit. But what's kind of like your favorite memory of being around golf?
One of my favorite memories, it doesn't have to do with golf, but there's this caddy. He's 77 years old. His name is Hilton James. He's caddied a long time, and he's still caddying. He caddies for Ben Coles. He's one of my good friends, and this is a fairly cleaner story with him. He's got some great stories with him, but we were in the Dominican Republic, and we were at the Westin on Punta Cana, and that was when the Kentucky Derby was going on. He's a big horse gambler, and so they got a couple favorites that they're betting on, and this is a few years ago, and the horse that ended up winning, its name was General Lee, and I'm sitting next to him, we're at the bar drinking, and I go, man, you got to bet on this horse, and he goes, shit, you really think so? You think this horse will finish? And I'm like, man, come on, I'm sitting next to you, it's in the field, you got to put some money on it, and the damn thing won. And he ended up, he did some type of like trifecta box, and he ended up making $900. And you would have thought he won the Powerball or something. It was unbelievable. And that's definitely one of them. There's a lot of stories with him. He's one of the best out there.
What about like on the golf course for yourself? Any like
course.
What would you consider like your best accomplishment in golf?
Let's see.
Kind of putting you on the spot there, I know, but
yeah. Let's say from a caddy perspective, I think probably the best one for me was this past year. Josh was either one shot out of the lead. Going in, we were in Hayward, California, which is just outside of Oakland, playing in the LA May Classic. That's the one Steph Curry plays in. Yeah.
Right.
And so Josh is like one shot out of the lead or right by the lead going in the final round. And I knew going into it that he needed a solo second to secure his tour card. So we ended up going through, and I'm trying to remember the trip. I'm going brain dead with the guy that won, but Trevor Cone won the tournament, and so he was leading like on the last three holes. He's up by 5 shots on us, and we are tied for second at this point, and we're playing with the guy that is tied with us for second. So the guy that we were playing with didn't finish the best, and Josh on the last hole had hit it right, and this green sits up, and the pin was on the right side, and we're in the right rough, and you have the grandstand that's kind of to the left and behind the green, and you could actually use the grandstand if you wanted to bounce it back on the green.
I'm totally against that. Go ahead.
Well, so Josh, we're like going through the numbers, and I'm like, all right, we got to cover 139 to cover over the bunker, and it was online with the middle of the green. And I had looked at the scoreboard when I was walking up. I don't think he had. And we actually had a two-shot lead on third place. So now I'm thinking, okay, you know, we're actually playing with the guy that's tied for third. He's, unless he makes birdie, we need to just play conservative. And so we're going through the numbers, and I'd come up with, it was like 139 covers, 160 long on that same line through the middle of the green. And it had kind of a questionable line. And I said, Josh, we just need to hit 9 iron at the corner of the green, or at the corner where the grandstand meets. It's basically in the middle of the green. And he goes, you think that's too much? And I'm like, well, we can't be short. And we have there's a slope back there. If it rolls up, it'll roll back in the middle of the green, and you got like a 30-foot putt back to the hole. So he goes with it, and I could tell he's a little nervous. And he hits it hits a great shot right where I was talking, and it ends up being right in the middle of the green. And we ended up finishing solo second, got his store card back, and you know, now we're here. So that's probably the best memory for me that up till now.
That's really cool stuff, man.
That's one thing I love about golf right there, is he had play-by-play members every moment of every part of that. You could probably do that with probably hundreds of your shots.
Hey, listen.
So, yeah, you know, there's shots, too, that I've intentionally tried to forget, too. So.
Yeah, well, yeah. But Lee can go through also every shot he's ever hit at Eagle Trace golf course, too. So he's got that in his mind. Any other like funny stories you got off the top of your head? Anything that you know, you don't have to get too salacious, name any names, but anything funny or cool you think you'd like to share?
So when I worked for KJ, we were playing in Harbortown, and I think it's number 14 is a par 3 that has water that goes around the front and around the right side of the green. It's a very narrow green. And I think our yardage was 170 front, 192 hole. The pin's in the kind of in the middle left of the green, middle back part left. And the key is to stay short of the pin, because you're putting back uphill. If you miss long, you're chipping down away, and you're actually chipping back at the water. And it brings chipping it in the water into play. So 170 for KJ, he flew his 7 iron, if he drew it, maybe 170. Okay. And his 6 iron, he'd fly about 185. So at the time, you know, I'm thinking 6 iron. And then there was a little bit of gust of wind that went down and off the right, and he kind of backs off of it, and he looks at me, he goes, 6 iron too much? And it quit blowing, and of course I'm scared to death of seeing him hit this thing short in the water. You know, so I'm like, no, you know, I tried to say it confidently, no, 6 iron's the club, just go ahead and hit it. Well, he hits this beautiful drawing shot right at the pin, and the damn thing lands right next to the hole and goes over the green and in this chipping area around a bunker. And he's got a downhill lie going to a downhill slope, and he's mad. And so I'm walking out in front of him, and he kind of walks up right behind me. And this guy, he's a super nice guy. He was nothing but great to me, but he was mad at me. And he goes, never miss green, or never miss long on back pin, never. And at this time I'm thinking, you know, this is a Thursday, I'm probably going to get fired after our round on Friday. it ended up working out. We made the cut and played okay. But I tell you what, he was always really great to me, but I was scared to death I was going to get fired after that tournament.
I bet.
Yeah.
That's funny. We've heard different, pros that talk about their thoughts on the pro-ams. And you mentioned some are Monday, Wednesday, some are just Wednesday, whatever. What are your thoughts on these? Because it seems like some guys are starting to get out of them, like they have a cough or something. But a lot of guys do play them. What are your thoughts on these pro-ams? I know they're moneymakers for the tournament, but not for you guys.
Sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's really good. If you get with a fun group, it's awesome. But I tell you, the ones that are bad is when you play with some golfers that aren't very good but think they're good, and they're actually like trying to compete with the pro.
And idiots.
And it's like, dude, come on, just hit. Let's go. And par is the worst score you can make in these pro-ams, okay? Because usually they're doing a Texas scramble or best ball or whatever. And it's like, if you're out of the hole, don't try to keep competing for a double. Let's just go. Let's move on to the next hole. But when you got a group that's not good and they know they're not good and they're there to have fun together, that's fine. That's great to be with them because it can be hilarious. Because they're picking their ball up in the middle of the fairway after they chunk their third shot. They're like, hell, I'm not going to make this one. So they pick it up, and they got their drink, and they just keep walking,
Perfect.
So there's good and bad. Most of the tournaments out on tour, they have really great food out during the pro-ams. So that's a plus for it if you're in them.
Jesse, before you ask the last question, let me – I have a real quick one. The news lately is Zach Johnson splitting up with his caddy, Damon Green, going to Ollie Schneider Jens. Now, you don't have to comment specifically on that situation, but it happens at least a couple times a year. It seems like something like that's happening. What kind of impact do you think that has on, like, say, a guy like maybe a ZJ who's very, successful in his time, and then a younger guy like Ollie who's grinding and trying to kind of figure his pace in the sport? Like, what kind of effect do you think that has, the change of the caddy, for both sides?
Zach obviously has had a lot of success, and they had 15 years together, so Damon did really well with them, and I bet they're still friends, even though I know that Zach hasn't played the way he wanted to the last 3 years since he's won the British Open. So it may be good for both of them, because Ollie's a really good up-and-coming player, young guy, has a lot of talent. Damon is one of the best caddies out there and he's a really good player himself, so he brings a lot for him. And I could see Ollie going out and having a lot of success this year just because of maybe just that little bit of confidence. I know, when Justin Thomas got when he got his caddy, I mean, it was like a switch went off and he just started winning, and I mean, you knew it was there and it was going to happen. It's sometimes those things happen. And Zach probably doesn't need a older, more experienced caddy anymore. I mean, he's seen it all. So he's just trying to change things up and trying to play better. And I understand that, it may come to the point where Josh is like, Lee, I've known you since you're 11 years old, but it just ain't working right now. Let's try something new. And I understand that completely. But I come from a playing standpoint, and I know how good just a little change here or there could be. So it's sometimes a hard situation, but most of the times it works out for both parties.
Would you say that most caddies end up as a caddy just because they weren't good enough to like make the professional tours? Is that why?
There's some of them for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But most everybody plays golf, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Especially on the PGA tour. I would say on the web, there are some that are club caddies. they know the game and they know how to play, but they weren't really players per se. So when you get in certain situations, maybe their advice may not be the best, you know, but on the PGA Tour, most of them were former players. And
I think that's obviously something that can only be beneficial. You've played at a high level of golf. You are trying to help somebody who's playing at the highest level of golf. I mean, you know, I think it's got to be. You have something to say there, Bob?
I was going to ask, you mentioned that how a lot of these guys played before you played yourself. How often do you guys get to pick up the clubs and go swing it when you're not having to caddy for your golfer?
You know, some caddies do a lot. They travel with their clubs. I haven't gotten that point yet. I feel like I still spend a lot of time with Josh. I'm also a swing instructor. So, like, sometimes when we're at tournaments, like, you know, I have a little bit more responsibility with him if he needs help or not. But, like, guys like Fluff, you know, Fluff will play every week if he can, you know, especially with the longer hours. There's a lot of players, Kip Henley, I'm sure you all follow him on Twitter.
Yeah,
Kip's a legend. Kip plays quite a bit. There's a lot of guys that will meet up and try to go play if they have time.
Couple more questions for you. I'm going to make this kind of a two-parter. We'll just start with part A. Where are you looking forward to going most this year on the PGA Tour full-time this year? Where do you want to be the most? Like, where are you most excited to go?
Bubba and I kind of talked about it before. I'm excited to go to Pebble.
I've
never been. And that Josh told me if he had to pay for one round of golf, you know, he's played Augusta National and places like that, he would pay to play Pebble.
Really? Over Augusta? Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Come west, Jesse.
Yeah. now granted, I haven't been to either those places, Jesse. I always thought Augusta, but
you've been to Augusta though, haven't you? You just stepped up.
I've been, but I've never played. Yeah,
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I hope you guys are there this year.
Me too. I'm excited about Pebble. I'm excited about Torrey. I got to experience Muirfield Village with KJ last year. That was pretty awesome. There's a lot of really nice golf courses. I'm just excited to get in whatever tournament we can and play well.
Are you guys going to be in Hawaii for the Sony Open?
As of right now, we're in. Okay. And I think we're going to get in. So
gotcha. So that's where you'll start the season out then?
Yeah.
Gotcha. I know you said you obviously hang out with Josh quite often. Have you guys, as a team, or any goal, or has he as an individual set any goals for yourselves, for him, that you're, you know, willing to share? If you don't want to share them, you're totally fine. But what are you guys looking to do this year on tour?
I mean, honestly, it's as simple as this. We want to win. The last 3 years, he's played really, really well, and he got over the hump this year getting back on the PGA Tour. He's a great ball striker. His short game has gotten better. He's still kind of streaky of a putter, but when he gets hot, he can make a lot of birdies. It's, you know, I think the beginning of the season hasn't been what we wanted it to be, but he did a lot of really good things, and his ball striking is always there. It's just getting him comfortable being back on the PGA Tour, and really for me as a caddy, when I see him getting hot, just getting out of his way, that's the best way to put it, because I feel like I'm caddying my best when I'm saying the least, and just letting him do his thing, because he can shoot some low rounds when he gets it going.
Nice. Well, Lee, this was a lot of fun. We, like Jesse and I talked about, we can hear guys tell stories forever, but we can't keep you here all night long. Yeah. But Jesse, any final thoughts before we wrap it up, Lee?
No, man, I appreciate you coming on. A lot of good stuff, Lee. We look forward to keeping up with you this season on the PGA Tour. You and Josh will be rooting for you both. Like I said, Chase has a ping pong table, so come over and play some ping pong.
Yes, all right.
There you go. I love it. Yeah. Yeah. Jesse
thanks,
gives
guys. It was really, really nice to meet you. Hopefully, I see you up at Pebble. And,
yeah.
And you can show me where to go. That'll be that's a foreign area to me, so I'm ready to take any advice.
Yeah, no, I'll definitely come on out there and catch up with you because I go out there usually for at least one practice round and one or two rounds in the tournament. So I'll definitely reach out to you and we'll make it happen. It's a lot of fun, and you're a lucky man because you're gonna get to do a lot more than I get to do when I go to Pebble. So that's pretty cool.
I just hope the weather's good. I know what it can be like if it's bad. So.
We always laugh around here because it seems like the week of Pebble, at least for the practice rounds, there's always at least one good day of rain. And then the weekend's kind of like, okay, is it going to be windy, rainy? Are we actually going to – the last couple of years have been beautiful, absolutely beautiful. Yeah. So that's what we're hoping for.
Yeah,
and hopefully I get to watch you guys on a Sunday. So that's what we're hoping for.
Well, thank you, buddy.
All right, man. I appreciate it. Everybody, go check out the show on Twitter at AlwaysPressDFS. Go give us a rating and review on iTunes. We'd much appreciate it. And go give Josh and Lee some – go follow them this year. Go enjoy the kickoff of the year at Sony. And until then, we're going to take the rest of the holiday season off. We'll catch up with you guys for the Tournament of Champions at the beginning of January. But thanks for listening, and we'll catch you guys later.